out those projects. So I'll hand it over to my acting CEO. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, as your successor Chairperson has mentioned, we will just zoom into the areas where the committee requested more clarity. I won't go through page by page on the presentation. I think the committee members have seen most part of the presentation. I will just zoom into the area where more clarity was requested. The first one, I will talk to the slide on the project on universal service and access strategy. There were questions as to, is there a breakdown to show the phases that we're going to spend $2.7 million and what exactly is that $2.7 million is going to be doing? The second part, Chair, I will be talking to the document that has been circulated. The reason for the document was the committee last time felt that there's a lot of information that is there which we are not reflecting in the presentation. The approach has been that we draft an executive summary of the project just to give a little bit of a background and what is it that we're trying to address so that we show that that budget allocation, what is it that is going to achieve. And also, Chair, on the broadcasting digital migration, just to give a little background and also the program rollout as to what is it that we're going to be doing as USASA and who will be our stakeholders and our other role players. So I will start with the one on universal service and access strategy. The slide that is shown on the screen is trying to give the breakdown each milestone as to what exactly is going to be delivered. Previously, it gave an impression that it's going to be one document, one strategy document that will be delivered. Now, the breakdown is trying to show that there will be different phases in the project, and each phase will be a milestone on its own, and there will be a deliverable in each of the phases. Chair, I'm not sure if you will allow me to just highlight each and every one of those phases. All right. The first phase one and phase two, were saying there will be a report. What will happen during that phase? There will be an assessment done for each area to check what is the socioeconomic status of the area. The intention is to assess the affordability and also the status of the infrastructure in those areas. And also to be able to quantify those areas to say this is an under-serviced area and these are the services that are required in that particular area. That will give the first report to us. The second milestone will be a report, we call it a phase three, where there will be a detailed analysis as to which services are not there, which services are there, and also the assessment of saying, well, how much do we need to ensure that the infrastructure is rolled out in those areas. That will also inform as to if we're saying the operators are contributing 0.2% of the annual turnover, is it sufficient for us to be able to address this access gap? That will be informed by that report. And phase four, Chair, will be to identify suitable indicators. where we will be able to measure, say, for instance, in 3 years' time, we will say, how far are we on universal service and access in the country? We will be informed by those specific indicators. We are also looking at, on that phase, to be able to have proper documentation that can ensure that we do implement the strategy in the last quarter of the next financial year. So the breakdown of these phases informs the amount that we budgeted for, the 2.7 million. We did go through a process of RFI to request for information to say how much, checking the industry, how much would each of the phases would cost. That has informed that allocation of 2.7 million. So I will quickly move to this document that has been circulated. This document, this document intends to give a brief outline of the key projects that we'll be undertaking under USAF. It's talking to the broadcasting digital migration, it's talking to the handover program, it's talking to the project of rapid deployment of access center. Now, on the broadcasting digital migration, we are saying currently the statistics that we have 9 million households in South Africa. Out of that 9 million, 5 million of those households will need subsidy. Those are the needy households. We have been allocated a budget of 400 million over 2 years. The next financial year that we're talking about right now, we have a budget of 180 million. Out of that 180, we'll be able to subsidize 367 households. 367,000 households.
Don't scare
us. So if one looks at those figures, it raises a little bit of concern that if we're looking at 5 million households that are needy, and in the next financial year, we'll only be subsidizing that small amount, which is almost 7%. It means we will need to accelerate the program in the following years very, very quick if we are to make sure that the people will be able to access the digital signal. So on the implementation model, we highlighted that the methodology that we've used, we're looking at the SABC database for concessional licenses, which at least will give us better indication as to who and where are those people who qualified for subsidies. The subsidy model that has been approved is the retail model, where we will be subsidizing the actual households. We're looking at a concept of the coupons, where we'll be working together with post offices, with houses of traditional leaders, and the municipal offices, where people can be able to go and purchase the set of boxes. The challenge is when people go there and purchase set of boxes, you need a process that will be very quick to verify as to do they qualify. That's the discussions that we have currently with the post office to be able to use their system to link to SABC database and to do a speed verification. One of the activities that we've highlighted in the document is the process of public awareness. We feel that the uptake of this set of boxes will be highly dependent on the public awareness. Previously, that task of public awareness has been allocated to the digital donor. Through the interactions that we had with other stakeholders, including the digital donor, we have agreed that we need to jointly manage this program. And also the participation in the public awareness, we need all of us to jointly conduct those activities. We feel that if that public awareness is not strengthened, people won't have any reason to go and buy a set of box, which will stall the whole process of subsidies because subsidies only come in when people go out there and purchase a set of books.
Are we reading from the same book? Because the information doesn't relate to what we have here.
I think you have it here. This one. This one. Stop talking from that one. What? Is it page 2 now?
Chairperson, I'm terribly sorry that I arrive here now, because I was just looking at my document and it said 16 hours. So I didn't come earlier. It was just the notice of the meeting. I received so many. Sorry about that. So all I wanted to say was, but then it brings me to the second point. See, I've now missed out part of the discussion, but I was just trying to figure out, Treasury, do we really have a separate fund in Treasury? Because my concern was,
let me just finish the presentation. Okay, they haven't finished the presentation, okay. So just hold with that, right?
Sorry, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. So just to make sure that the members follow my presentation. Right now I was talking to the activities on page 2 of the document. Under 1.3, that is the pre-launch. Yes. See, I've covered most part under the pre-launch. I've mentioned that we will have a multi-stakeholder forum where the joint activities will be managed regarding the broadcasting digital migration. The post-launch, Chair, that will be the process now of actually managing the subsidies. I've mentioned that we intend using SABC database that shows the concessionary licenses. The database currently has got more than the number of 367 that will be subsidized. So we felt we are comfortable to use that database for the first year, which is next financial year. One of the challenges that we picked up has been that the manufacturers generally, they feel the process of subsidies should be very quick. If a user buys a set-top box, the period between that and when they receive their money, they're not expecting it to be more than 24 hours. It means now you need a system that will be quick enough as soon as people purchase the set-top box. Then the suppliers will get their money as soon as possible. One of the dependencies, Chair, on the project is the finalization of the launch of the digital migration, and also the availability of the set-top boxes. Further than that, the digital signal itself, the whole process will be much more dependent on Centec rolling out the digital signal. Then the uptake of the set-top boxes will be following where Centec has started. Then that's where USASA will also be starting for the subsidies. Page 4, Chair, is just summarizing the stakeholders that we will be working with in the project. We are expecting that at least by June, we'll have a clear program together with our stakeholders. We are hoping at this stage that we will be using SAPO to to manage our process of subsidies. I'm not going word to word on the document. I hope the members are following my step as I go through the document. The next project I will talk to, Chair, is the handover of access centres, which is highlighted under 2 on page 4. If I may briefly give a background to the project, there's been reports that have been saying the centres that USASA rolled out, some of them are not working properly. Now, that is the background to this project. During our assessment, we got some indication that some of the reasons the centers are not working is the ownership issue. There's no proper ownership. People who are running these centers, they still believe it's USASA's center, so when they want to leave, they just leave it. So one of the focus areas of the handover is to make sure that there will be proper owners of these centers. We have started the project already in the current financial year. We are hoping that in the next financial year we'll be completing the total handover of all the centers. In the report, it does show that phase one has been completed, where we're doing the audit and doing the actual needs assessment of the centers. And phase two is targeting a certain number of the centers that will be handed over in the current financial year. Then phase three will be training and skills development of access centers. And phase four will be signing over of the agreements, indicating clearly what is the role of USASA, what will be the role of whoever is running this center. Phase five will basically be monitoring and evaluation. Our view is that even beyond us handing over these centers, we still have an interest that these centers are operating, and we still need to monitor them. We need to still be sure of the impact that they have in those communities. So for us, it doesn't mean after the handover we just forget about the centers. We still have an interest to make sure that they are working. And, of course, the technology is developing very fast. They might need some assistance in a year or two. Chair, we have a budget allocation of 13 million for this project. I've highlighted the phases that we'll go through. The next project that is highlighting, Chair, is the rapid deployment of the access center. Rapid deployment of access centers means the acceleration of the deployment of these centers. One of the areas we looked at was that we looked at the number of centers that the agency has deployed over the past 10 years. And we criticized ourselves to say the number is very low. There are several reasons that the number has been low, but one of them we picked up was that the methodology that we're using. We tended to want to implement these centers ourselves. The approach we are taking, we intend to take going forward, is the approach of paying subsidies, not necessarily paying all the costs, all the capital costs to run this project. To pay subsidies, subsidies will be determined from time to time by the needs of whoever is going to be running the center. And we have gone through the process of requesting information in the industry, and there are some indications that most service providers would require less than 50% subsidy to roll out these centers. And one of the areas we want to address, previously we used to have a one-size-fits-all approach on these centers. Obviously, the requirements and the needs in the communities will differ. We're trying to provide that flexibility as well to say we will look at the particular requirement, not necessarily say whoever will put 10 computers and a printer. We'll look at the varying needs of the communities. So on page 6, we are highlighting the stakeholders that we'll be interacting with during this project. our experience has shown us that in most communities we'll find that the two-thong service centers where people normally go in the rural areas could be the centers that would be appropriate to have an ICT access center. The issue we need to address is the ownership, who will own. Normally those centers are owned by the local municipalities, in some instances district municipalities. Those are the stakeholders we're saying we're targeting to work with to make sure that there will be some ownership to the center. And also in some areas there are community-based organizations that have interest and have capacity to run the centers. Some of the centers we have right now, they are run by community-based organizations and they are run well. But as I mentioned earlier on, that we will have different types of ownership models depending on a particular community. So the last project I will highlight will be the broadband infrastructure project. In our business plan, we're saying we're targeting three underserviced areas. Currently, our interpretation of an underserviced area is based on the recent definition, where we're proposing that an underserviced area will be defined at least at the local municipality level. So our target here is targeting three local municipalities that will be identified as underserviced areas to roll out the broadband infrastructure. At the bottom of page 8, Chair, is just highlighting the process that we will follow. What informs us on the rollout of the broadband infrastructure is Section 90 of the Act, where it does make a provision that we will go through a process of competitive bidding to be able to source a licensed operator to roll out infrastructure in an area that where we have identified it's got a need. The last page, Chair, is indicating the stakeholders that we will be interacting with and also the process that we will be following, being informed, of course, by the fund manual. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, first of all, in the last presentation, if I remember, Chairperson, I had to leave before the meeting, so maybe what I'll say might have been covered in today's meeting. My question will be around the setup boxes. According to the presentation, you were saying 367,000 households in the first phase maybe will be targeted. My question will be, in identifying these 367,000, what will be the role of the municipalities in identifying the indigent people in this regard? As in your presentation, you also said the purchasing of the set-top boxes will also be done from the municipalities. But in terms of identifying the needs, what role will the municipalities play? The other one will be around the same issue that if finally after the application the number exceeds 3,000, that represents 67,000, do you have a plan? What will you do next? Or it will be just final, it will be first come first serve, or there will be another plan in that regard? Thank you.
Further questions, Nsiki, Julie?
Thank you, Ron. Chairperson, I just wanted to come back to the principle of, you know, there were some reservations about capacity to manage this huge budget. But I also just wanted to ask about the fact that this fund is identified as a fund, yet I'm not 100% sure that it is a secret fund. What is the state of this fund? Has it been ring-fenced? I understand where it originates from. That's the first question. The second question is, if we look at the contributions made by service providers to the fund, he can sit there next to the DA.
I'm fine next to you.
I don't want you to sit there.
The fund at its establishment, was it not meant for a specific purpose? And that is more to expand universal access to the broadcast industry. And not, I have it wrong. Not to the broadcasting industry, more to the telecommunications industry. I just want to have clarity on that, because apart from the capacity, we also need to know what are the legal ramifications of all of this, including Treasury regulations with regards to this. Thank you, Chief.
So I will take the first question, saying during this process of broadcasting digital migration, what will be the role of the municipalities? So for the next financial year, we are receiving 180 million. And the number of 367 set-top boxes is based on that allocation. Now, we said for the first phase, we are aware that there is another process of further identifying the needy households. But for the first phase, we said we'll then use the current SABC database that is showing people who are receiving concessionary licenses. So we are aware that there will be more people, maybe some of them will be outside of that database. We know the situation in our rural area. But we said just for phase one, we will use that database, but there will be another process of further identifying the native people. So the municipalities will definitely have a role to play on that. The second question, Chair, was relating to that, saying, what if the need out there exceeds that number of 367? Chair, that is linked to the same process of identifying further needy households. Unfortunately, there's always this challenge of limited resources. For the next financial year, we know there is this allocation of 180, which can only accommodate 367. But if more need is identified, it would make it easier for us for the second phase now to know exactly who are other people that we didn't cover. Chair, the third question, I know the team at USAFA is itching to respond to this one. I will give it to my team to respond.
Is
it
difficult?
Wait. Difficult. CFO? Take the
next one. If you look now on the USAFA budget, which is the two page. On the second page, it reflects there that staff costs are 38.2% of the total budget of 66.7 million. When you drill down into the budget, you'll find that there's about 15 new positions that we're creating at a lower level and in the provinces. Yes, that's what I wanted to say. I think that addresses the issue of capacity.
So thanks, Chair.
Job creation.
Issues on capacity related to the set-top boxes. One is to appreciate that this is a multi-party project. We have Digital Zonga, which is already set up. We have the Department of Communication, which plays a very lead role. We also have the South African Postal Office, as well as Post Bank within it. And our approach is really is this, that our role is to disperse the fund. Now, the best way to look into it is to set up a project office within the internal processes of ISASA to deal with the funding issues. But your service provider, in this case, we will be having discussions with Post Bank, which has the databases that we're looking for, both of the SABC, both of the indigenous households, as well as those of SASA, whereby you could be able to then mix and match and be able to then move into those areas clearly. Now, what will happen from the province's side, it will be that the staff that we'll have in the province will further assist us because we do not have bigger roles that we are playing in the province. We don't have many people playing there. There will be much more coordinating approach. So it will be that the disbursement will come into our coffers within our fund, within the bank, but then the team that will be a multidisciplinary team, multi-party team, for lack of a better word, will be able to decide on it. What is critical for us in the first quarter is to get the verification of where those households are, get the list out, be able to carry a simple message in towards the communities that we'll be targeting, and be able to then address them in a manner that we are able to say, these are the 367,000 households, and this is the priority areas we're looking into. Now, we also have dependencies, as ACNC has already spoken about, that CENTEC will also direct us as to where it starts, and the debate is still has to continue as to whether we can, if possible, then change the trend that CENTEC maybe does not focus only in the urban cities first, maybe change the trend to start in much more under service area. The debate has not been finalized, and I'm sure you appreciate that the discussions are ongoing, and there is a strategy, I think, that if we take into cabinet, there's as well a discussion that we're taking with the department as a central coordinating department. But the 108 was predetermined that we are given to it. The discussions as to which approach, the 70%, we also appreciate that there was a cabinet decision on this and that we have to act in accordance with that particular cabinet decision. So we'll await if there's any change and if there's any interaction perhaps from members towards the relevant structures, perhaps the debate will also direct us to how we must approach this particular set of box of digital migration. But key is whether the country by 2015 will be ready to make sure that all households that are directed as far as, 5 million TV-only households are able to receive that. There's been discussions, and I've had a question at some point as to if the 70% covers up to your point, the person does not have the difference. We unfortunately do not have an answer as yet because we must then look into whether there is any other mechanism to address it, and perhaps discussions can take place from that angle. And moving on to Honourable Member Killian's question on the fund and how it was set up. It is true that within the telecom, that was the focus. It was telecommunications related. We took money, 0.2%, from the telecommunications operators. For over many number of years that we've taken the money from, for the past 10 years to be precise. Now, in the advent of this particular legislation, the Electronic Communications Act, there's been change because the idea really here was there would be convergence between telecoms and broadcasting. Now, it presented a bit of a niggling problem because if you look at how the Act is being crafted in its current state, convergence does not happen 100%, but it seemed to be looking at working on parallel basis. Now, we have broadcasters making contributions voluntarily towards the MDDA, and then as well, then they can the excess we can offset against the fund. Now, that's a bit of a challenge when you move on how you do it. But there's a regulation that came out last year or year before from ICASA Section 89 regulation, which states that between USASA and MDDA, we must collaborate on how we collect the funds and then move into how we then can say whether that has been dealt with. The difference is when operators put into the MDDA fund, there is a process of how they can spend the money. Now, come to the area that you are in. When we put money into ISASA, the Act says we must take all the money into the National Revenue Fund, upon which Parliament will appropriate, which is the process that we're sitting here for. So it means Parliament, when it appropriates, it will have to have been informed by a number of issues as to the need, as whether the money is enough, and a number of issues that maybe the department might start to direct us to do. Now, that's an area that we need to look into. Now, when you read that this legislation in isolation, you would find that the PFMA also has a role, because it says all public funds within the Treasury, I mean, which are received by National Revenue Fund, it talks about, but it does not have a specific proviso that says such funds shall be ring-fenced accordingly that they shall be used for the ICT sector. There was a bill that came out which we made a representation on to say perhaps you could look into the same way as it did with the Justice Department, where all monies received are ring-fenced and you are able to use them back into the ICT industry. So there's a debate, we could look into it. We are quite encouraged by the fact that the Department has requested our inputs on the areas that we found in the Act which still require further discussion, and they are considering these issues to say how does the fund respond to the major issues that are before us, and how do we protect the interest of the ICT sector using the very contributions, and maybe then that's how it will be able to do it. And as well as with the money bill, that when the committee is given a power to take a look into the existing plans and strategic focus, it helps us to then formulate the way forward to say, in this country, these are the gaps, this is how much we require, this is how we could appropriate funding. And some of the projects we thought would deal with it is the strategy on universal service and access is to put us in the current state, because the strategies we're using are much more telecoms related. Now we're trying to put ourselves in a new phase of, if we go out there and say, what is universal service and universal access within a broadcasting telecoms, these are the answers, and we come back and engage all stakeholders and have a debate as to whether we can respond in that direction. So that's the dilemma we're dealing with. But we're also encouraged that we're working closely with the MTTA. We're going to be heightening our relations even better on how to respond to areas of common interest that we could deal with it, and also tap into each other's funding until such time a permanent, long-lasting solution is found, which is looking into the Act, dealing with areas where it might have shortfalls, dealing with areas that might be improved, and then we come back and say we have a better workable Act that makes us all, as we're sitting here, to talk from the same point. And we're hoping that with strategies that we're putting, we could be able to start charting the way forward together on where the access gaps, how much do we require, is 1%, 0.2 enough, or should we then say we should increase it to 1%, and should we have all broadcasters then contributing the same amount, and how will that money be spent? Is legislation adequate to cover both scenarios, and are we moving to the next level? So we're hoping that we, that way we could be addressing that. Thank you, Chair.
But let me just say one thing myself. As far as I know, the Universal Service Access Fund is in the Act. It's a substructure of USASA that has been created in law. Am I right? So the fund exists at the moment. Is it with National Treasury or is it in a bank? Can I just understand that? Do you have a bank account where the money gets deposited every month and it's kept there, or is it with National Treasury?
Okay, can I maybe go back to what you said? The Act says all licensees shall pay 0.2%. They pay to who? To the regulator.
To ICASA.
To ICASA. ICASA, in terms of its Act, ICASA Act says, Section 15 says, all monies received by the regulator shall be then transferred into the National Revenue Fund.
Right.
So they take that money to the National Revenue Fund. So it sits with Treasury.
Okay. We, that's where the fund is at the moment.
At the Treasury, that's correct.
Okay.
Okay. Honourable Member, don't scare
right.
me.
Now, it's 1.2, how much is there in there at the moment? Is it 1.2 billion?
I'll be speculating. I'll be speculating as to exactly it will be. Could be that we bend it around 1 billion, around there, but also take that over the years that we've been getting appropriation from Parliament, it could be that anything between 200 to 300 million that might have got today. So we might be sitting anything between 800 and 1 billion.
Okay.
We still need to confirm those numbers.
Okay. Now, what I want to understand is, will that, will National Treasury now transfer 180 million rand into your account? Is that what's going to happen in the current financial year?
That's correct, sir.
Okay. Now, and then that's the legal question I want to ask. That money has been generated from the mobile operators, am I right? And broadcasters.
No.
Mobile operators.
It's telecom operators.
He knows more than you. He knows more than you. It's been generated from who?
All these years it's been generated by telecoms operators.
Right. Now, the question is that telecom and the mobile operators. Okay. Now, the question was, is it legal in terms of the current legislative framework to use that money for what is really broadcasting? Because you said the legalities have to be sorted out. Does the current legislative framework allow for that? I don't know myself.
The Act says that with the ECA,
yeah,
you have to talk about Electronic Communications Act. I mean, Electronic Communications Network Service Providers. So that also even including broadcasting. So
okay,
it would then mean that the fund, if used in the current state, can be spread to whatever industry that we're looking into it. That maybe the technicality would be whether the telecoms operators, there's no law that, it's not very clear in the law, as to if the money is in the fund, can it be then said that it is money that the minister or treasury or whoever might decide on it cannot use it within the broader ICT spectrum? That's a question that you might have to look into. Does it still belong to the ICT sector, or does it money that is just for ICT related in accordance with the Act? So currently it will be, if it used the current, we're using the current Act, it will be correct that it is used in this particular area.
Okay, and then my last question on this issue is, has the minister issued then a policy directive which says that I'm asking you to use this fund for this purpose? I know there was some announcement by the minister. I don't know whether it was just in his speech or where, or somewhere, but has he issued a policy directive?
Not that I know of, Chair, but this is how we follow it. There is a policy in place. That was one that was done. Secondly, there was a discussion that it was cabinet decision that it shall be USAF that shall be used for the 2.45 billion. And thirdly, that if you look at the current crafting of the ECA, it provides that the fund is under the direction of the minister. So the minister, and it's not say in a prescribed manner, it's just that the fund is under the direction of the minister. So the policy taken, it could well be that it is sufficient to cover the understanding that we have. We have not seen a directive to date that says, please use this fund for the broadcast digital migration. It's a debate, unless it precedes me, and I'm sure colleagues from the department at some point might clarify. But I know of this policy, the cabinet decision, and there's also that the money that directly by the minister at some point.
Yeah, no, but you see, I think we must get clarity. Is
yeah.
there a cabinet decision? Because you know, there must be a lawful movement of funds. That's all that I think we're concerned about. We don't have a problem with it, but it must be, you don't want a situation where you start implementing and then there's a legal challenge and now we're running all over the place to see how did this happen. As long as there's a lawful movement of funds, that's okay from where I sit. Okay, are there any questions on this matter? Can we move over? Who's got a hand? You want to say something? Okay.
Chair, I wanted to say that according to my understanding of the PFMA, if the fund is within the National Revenue Fund, the Minister of Finance can use it in any way that he sees fit. That's my understanding.
Julie?
I think it's just important for us to just check on that basis. Just make sure that we're doing all the little calculations. If we could just get sort of an indication from, you know, if there was a directive, that we just have everything and we know as a committee that if we then endorse this, there would be no sort of comebacks. I would just feel much more comfortable. Thank you, Chair.
Because I came late, maybe we've covered it. But I understand your line of questioning in terms of the processes of the fund. But I think maybe the challenge will be that the money to go to the USAF, it means it will have to be done by the National Treasury. Now, I'm not sure that here we can be able to deal with that part. Because once the funds go to the USAF account, clearly Treasury will communicate and say, this is the money which I'm forwarding. And then there is this policy or directive in terms of what they must be used for. I think the more procedural aspect of that, because ICASA has posted the money to the national account, now it's under the jurisdiction of National Treasury. Now the processes which I use, internal processes by National Treasury in transference of money, that's what kicks in. What it means, I'm not sure that the that because for us it can be only to track it until to buy from ICASA to National Treasury, but from there the National Treasury takes over the regulation and the processes which they need to follow. Once it's become into their account, it's just they clarify what the money should be done for, because they're saying there's a policy directive which is talking about that particular matter. But I think what is important maybe is to look into what we are saying in terms of exactly whether the policy directive is there as a cabinet decision, because we have learned in the past that there's been other issues which were told that they are cabinet decision, only to find that there's no cabinet decision in other things. But it has not become a part of maybe further issue but from the minister's side. I'm not talking about the DOC when I say there's been instances where there's no cabinet decision, but I know from other committees that that's happened, that there's people are laboring under the impression that there is a cabinet decision until later to discover there's no cabinet decision anyway. We're just laboring under that assumption. So I think maybe if we can talk to the department at one point to try and deal with those particular aspects so that we are ascertain.
I think those are valuable suggestions. I just want to take one more thing also, because I want to clear up in my mind the chain. Now, where does the post office and the post bank fit in? Because from what I can read from the document is that if a service provider gives 100 set-top boxes to 100 voucher holders, then if the post bank must pay the retailer. Am I right? So that means the money gets transferred then from you when it comes to you to the post bank, and from the post bank to somebody else. Am I right? Is that the... Okay, you can clarify. Just clarify that for me.
Sure. First of all, the project talks from a retail point of view, which you are correctly stating. The retailers are saying if we get to get coupons, we need to redeem the money within 48 hours. Now, looking at how we would be able to, issues of capacity, for instance, that you're talking about, whether are we in a position as USASA to keep track that we pay as quickly as possible. We are still in discussion, I must just put a variety that we are still in discussion to finalize on these issues that are talking about the post bank being the one best possible area, because it is a bank, it can respond quicker to payment. We're able to also tap into other benefits that come from having identified the databases as a project advisor to USASA. So that it's just a management tool that we're using. But we are they're coming back to having used, we are the ultimate responsible party. When we do the drawdowns, when we do the responsibilities of how much has been spent, we think that it would be better suited approach. It's still something that is still in discussion, Chair. But also, Chair, also we want members to also understand this project, as I indicated, is much more bigger. The USASA is responding to the little portion that we have been directed that we need to respond to. But I, some of the discussions that are going on also show that perhaps there is a need to look at broadcast digital migration holistically as to whether the country's readiness in 2015, how the milestones will be, and whose party will be responsible, so that we have a sense. So some of the questions that are fundamental as to whether will we not have a legal challenge, and maybe we're not seeing it, perhaps it will be raised at a particular point as to what guarantees do we have and have a sense of getting them through. But that's the point that I think we are coming responding to adequately to what has been allocated, how we're going to put things in place in the first two quarters, will be verification of the needy households, which TV owning, how we respond to those, which areas are we covering, and then communicate that back to stakeholders, even including ourselves, to say this is how the list might be able to. We'll stabilize ourselves around it, because our role is we must use subsidies for the needy, and this is how we are linking the two that we'll be able to respond to. As to whether money is adequate or not adequate is a debate that we could continue having, but this is what you have been allocated over there.
Hi.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've just got a couple of issues.
Sorry.
Okay.
This always happens to me.
Sorry.
It's not
food in
this. It's not my fault. It's not my fault. Sorry.
It's my fault.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, I'm just, curious to know one aspect here. I do realize that we have given us a presentation of issues that we said you should look at. I wanted to know this on this page, bullet 4.4, the dependencies. It's just not a question that is really going to take you away from what you're discussing, but I think I need to know because I'm curious about the implementation, the successful implementation that USASA is looking at of this project. When you say one of your dependencies is ICASA to declare the underserviced areas, what yardstick would be ICASA using to declare where are the underserviced areas, and what would you define as a underserviced area in this?
Thanks, Chair. In the process that we've undertaken in this financial year or the last financial year, what we did by the time that we were doing a policy review of universal service and access for recommendation to the minister, we also did a study on underserviced areas. So by the time that we're making a submission to the minister on proposed recommendation of universal service and access, we also recommended to ICASA what an underserviced area is. So that submission is with ICASA. They must have been waiting for the minister to declare formally what universal service and access is, and the process after that, they will take it forward. And we have not yet heard anything from ICASA yet on the determination of an underserviced area. So we have given them the basis upon which to determine an underserviced area as well.
Let's say I don't a rider, an underserviced area. You see, in some instances, we find that these terms that we use when we implement, we don't really understand what we are saying, such as this universal service that we're talking about. You find that in the rural, you call it the rural of the rural, not the one that I spoke about of Johannesburg. Now I'm talking about the one of Limpopo. Yes. And what is your definition of the underserved? We are going to find that this rollout comes to Soweto where people are privileged. That's why I want to know. Exactly. I don't know. Maybe you can explain it now that you gave them the explanation.
A definition of an underserviced area to you, Chair, is a municipal area, whether it's a district municipality or local municipality. But in this case, we recommended a local municipality because it is much smaller, that has no infrastructure, communications infrastructure at all, be it telecommunications or broadcasting. Or that do have the communications infrastructure, but the communications infrastructure is not enough to cater for the needs of that particular community. That's what the definition of an underserviced area is. And that is exactly the kind of definition that we've given to ICASA. And by the time that we were giving those definitions, we had even a list in terms of the research that we had conducted then of those underserviced areas, to also answer the question that what is the status of ICTs within the country of universal service and access. We do have that list, and we had provided a list of underserviced areas in terms of the research that we had conducted in the last financial year to ICASA.
Nikki,
okay.
Eric,
and
then Trey.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't want to sound cynical today, but USASA is a entity that come a couple of years now. Am I right? I'm getting the impression that we are dealing here with a company that started yesterday. For instance, I just want to refer to your vision: achieving digital inclusion by accelerating affordable universal service and access in South Africa for socio-economic development. It's it's wonderful vision. But then the first point the CEO started with, you know, they have to ICT sector review, socioeconomic status among population. So I would have thought that all these things must have been done over the years, because this portfolio committee put a stamp of approval on this USASA's budget for many years now. This is my first time in Parliament. So I'm just a bit worried that we've done nothing in the past years and that we've achieved nothing. I'm not saying that, but that's the impression one can get. And this whole digitization process and everything, it doesn't start yesterday. I'm just a bit anxious, Chairperson, that the clock is ticking and we are not keeping in touch with everything, and you know, we are running late with all our efforts. But that's it's really a concern, Chairperson. And another thing I just want to ask you, you say something about 367,346, but what troubles me is not the thousands, but the 46. Why 46? Well, but just leave it. Okay, they are going to receive the set-up boxes. That's only a little joke, you know, 46, you know, is 1,000, then you get 46, you know. Why not 47 or 48 or whatever? But they are going to receive the set-up boxes. But you're telling this committee that actually it will take a couple of years for the whole South Africa to get the set-up boxes and to be on the digital signal before they are switching off the analog. So everyone will make sure that all the households in South Africa are satisfied, because I can think one day if they put off the switch and the father of the house put on the TV to watch the news or whatever, and there's nothing, there will be a lot of unhappy chappies in South Africa if that happens. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, sir. Just to say that, Chair, the question of universal service and access is a moving target. That is why, even in terms of the Act, the EC Act, it says that each and every 2 years there will be a biannual review of what an underserviced area is. And the definition of an underserviced area depends upon the achievement of universal service and access. Even if, say, we did have this kind of information in 1997 when we started, but each and every 2 years after that, we still had to make sure that we keep up with the trends in terms of the latest development within the ICT sector, to make sure that in terms of policy and implementation, we are up to date, and even in terms of the levels of affordability by the people, they can be to see if they are still our... can still afford those kind of services. So what we are saying is that we understand it very well that we did so little in the past. That is why we are coming up with this kind of a framework and the implementation that the acting CEO has already talked about, to make sure that we do things differently and faster in this time, so that so many people could be able to afford these kind of services and have access to them. So that kind of a strategy, say, is trying exactly to address, to give that kind of foundation and the implementation plan over a period of 5 years, to also include the kind of models and the rapid deployments and the handover strategies that the acting CEO has talked about. We are definitely sure that once we come up with this kind of strategy, you see, which will be an implementation plan over the next 5 years, we will be able to report in 2014 or in 2014 or 2015 that this is how far we have gone, and we want to assure you that we would have gone much faster than in the past 10 years that we had existed since 1997, because we never did these kind of plans and strategies. We hurried by making sure that we deliver services to the people first who didn't have them, so that we could learn some of the lessons later, which we have learned now. That's why we are coming with these kind of strategies and delivery plans going forward. Thanks, sir.
I was also going to underscore that also there was a legislative change that also would then say, let's put us in a different trajectory than what we used to be. And also to moving away from just being a telecenter type of organization and not respond to the needs of communities out there. The 367,446 is also that we looked at that there was a number bandied of about 700 rand for a set-top box. And then if it's 70% thereof, we then came to the number of 495. We then said if we get 180, then there's how many households would come out. So the 46, there's 61 at the end. That's how it comes to it, because we're using the number that we came through. So it was the authentic process.
Okay. No, Chair, but before Mr. Kolwane, Chair, I think it's very important for you, Sasa, to clarify that in terms of the challenges out there, it's not that for the last past 10 years they were not doing anything. They were sitting there doing nothing. But we understand that in terms of the challenges, they were trying by all means to face the challenges with a little budget and things like that. As a person with my background in the ANC Youth League, I know where USASA comes from and I know the contribution of USASA. So I don't think it's correct for members to suggest that USASA was sitting doing nothing as if it's an organization that has been created yesterday. I think we need to correct that, Chair. Thank you.
On a point of order, I just want to make it clear in my quest to get to the truth, sometimes you have to ask critical questions, and it might seem if I am making suggestions that people are not doing, but just to get clarity on certain things, you have to formulate a question in a certain manner, and then maybe it can be seen as you've seen it longer. But please give me the opportunity in this meetings to ask my questions. I think this is why we're here.
Mr. Kolwane?
This is a revolving tap. Today is this side, the other time is the other side. It was, so don't worry, I understand. So I understand. It has moved to another side. So you'll get used. But, Chair, look, Chair, I just am trying to understand, Chair. You remember yesterday when ICASA was presenting? There were two items which they put there, which I've asked about, which they were, they've written universal service and access, that and so on. Two items. Then they try to explain. But I just want to check exactly to say the duty of USAF in defining the under-service area vis-a-vis ICASA. Where does the responsibility lie? I know that USASA advised the minister, but I'm saying where is the responsibility to define that? Between USASA and ICASA. Because yesterday ICASA was making a presentation of the budget. And believe me, they put more than a million in these processes of universal service and access. Which they are saying the same, more or less the same thing which they are doing, except that I know that to advise the minister, then they should make the determination. But where does the responsibility lie? Because I see some duplication. But because if you advise the minister, what does the minister do if ICASA as a regulator regulating the industry has to define this issue of underservice and so on. But just to get a clarity around that, it might happen that the legislation also is causing some a little bit problem and so on. The second issue, Chair, is that I'm a hypocrite. I don't have to defend anything. Chair, is the issue which has been raised to say maybe, Chair, we need to formally deal with that matter. Where we've dealt with it, Chair, but we could not finally take a decision. Maybe we'll do that when we come back from reserve. Our responsibility as a committee to make sure that indeed this digital migration does take place as a committee. I'm talking as a committee, our responsibility as the defenders of the poor in this country. The sole institution given power by the constitution of this country to defend the poor and carry the aspiration of the poor. To deal with the issue of where are we in terms of the digital migration. So remember, Chair, we talk about the issue of trying to bring back together the stakeholders. Can't we deal with that matter as a committee and finalize it so that we know that our program indeed reflects that? Because, Chair, the current date is 2011. Now it's 2010. We're in March or April. 2 months will be not active, the World Cup and so on. The time we wake up, it will be August 2010. But I don't know, Chair, maybe other members can be able to understand where are we in terms of the process. Perhaps because there are many role players in terms of that particular process, you suffer being one. I think that was the second issue, Chair, which I wanted to check with whether we can be able to deal with that particular matter. And so, thank you.
Going to come in as well. No, from the department. Come somewhere where we can speak. You can come in front of this time, so we can hear you.
Thanks, Chair. In terms of the underserviced area, what happens is that the role of USASA, it provides policy and regulatory advice to both the minister and the regulator on universal service and access issues. So what happens is that ICASA, when it wants to make a determination or a regulation on a particular issue that relates to universal service and access, it give us a request as USASA that let us advise on that particular issue, and we do provide that kind of an advice, which is exactly something that had happened with an underserviced area. They requested us to come up with that definition, and we have given them the definition. And also what happens is that ICASA is also responsible for universal service and access regulations. They are exactly the implementers of the Electronic Communications Act, because they make regulations and monitor what you call and monitor the implementation of such regulations by the sector. So that's where USASA comes in as far as that is concerned. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to, from the point of view of the department, just to deal with the earlier question that was addressed around the legality of using the Universal Access Fund for the purpose of the of broadcast digital migration. There has never been a policy directive issued to actually say the fund must be used for purposes of BDM. Our understanding as a department is that because of the developments in the ICT sector, the issue that the colleague from USASA talked about, the issue of convergence. Generally, the ICT sector tends to be governed within the parameters now of the ECA Act, which makes less a distinction between the different types of technologies. So in general terms, what that means is that all the previously separate distinct sectors, broadcasting, postal, and telecommunications, are now are converging. And if you look at broadcast digital migration policy that was promulgated, was approved in terms of the ECA Act. Now, our own interpretation as a department is that there is nothing wrong. Actually, it's consistent to use the USAF. It's consistent with the spirit of convergence. And therefore, legally, we interpret it to say it's within correct legal parameters. We, of course, take into account the fact that historically, the Universal Service and Access Fund emerged from the Telecommunications Act, which was an act that came up in an era where you had all the subsectors were separated. But now, in an era where you're converging, we think, in line with what also colleagues from USASA have explained, in that, in responding to a question that says, why does it seem as if USASA has not been there, it seems as if it's starting things from scratch? Because the environment in which the ICT sector is continuously changing, and the technologies are converging. And therefore, this distinction between the subsectors no longer make a meaningful sense. To the extent that then it became necessary to actually repeal the Telecommunications Act so that you can then now treat the sector as, even if it's still at early stages, but the intention and the trajectory, technological trajectory, is that you are going to have convergence. You are going to be able to do broadcasting, to do a voice, to do data using the same technology. And therefore, it is within that understanding that we think and we interpret that usage of yourself is basically not outside the law as understood within the context of convergence and the Electronic Communications Act. I just wanted to clarify that point of view, Chairperson, from the department's point of view. Thank you.
Chair, I just wanted to ask, if we look at the steps on page 4, I think what we need to perhaps ask USASA is that once they start the rollout and you get the beneficiaries and the beneficiaries' families, I think what would be important is that they actually keep a very accurate database, so that we have a situation in years to come that you know that you're rolling out to more families. Because I think one of the major problems that was faced in, for instance, the housing sector is that, you know, the real database of beneficiaries was sometimes a little compromised. And I think departments were getting criticized where they were actually innocent, but it was the problem was really the database of those beneficiaries, so that we know this year this is the rollout, next year that's the rollout, the year thereafter, you know, that you actually make progress in the exercise.
So
thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I just wanted to. Okay, thank you, Chair. I just wanted to deal with the question of where are we with digital migration. Just perhaps to appraise the members in terms of the work that has been done so far. The manufacturing strategy was actually developed and presented to the stakeholder forum to solicit the inputs. The scheme for ownership, which deals largely with the subsidies that USASA has spoken of, has been developed and has also been taken through various stakeholders for consultations. It's actually in its finality as we are speaking. There is a process in place to appoint manufacturers who will be leading the manufacturing processes. Launch is anticipated to take place before end of the year. So basically, there will be set-top boxes available in the market before end of the year. So the process is quite moving. A lot of work has gone into it. A lot of stakeholders have been consulted. National Treasury, Post Office, USASA, SABC, all those stakeholders are on board in terms of what is transpiring. So I just wanted to respond to the issue or the question in terms of where are we with digital migration. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for the clarity, but I think Mr. Kolwani was saying is what role do we play in getting a clearer perspective and also ensuring that it meets the needs of the people out there rather than just, you know, the elites in urban areas.
Mm.
Because for the risk to go and quickly buy a set-top box for 700-800 rands, convert it, if they own a 25,000 rand plasma screen, it's not a big issue. They can do it tomorrow morning once you put it on the, you know, once you announce that this thing is ready.
Yeah,
so it's really for people who don't have that kind of resources, who are not empowered, who might not have the access. That's the problem. And, you know, that's where I think our focus, and that's the issue that is really raised. We must be absolutely clear how we're going to get it right. Okay, I take it that there are no further questions. And may I just take the opportunity of thanking the USASA team for clarifying things. And for the resubmission of documents, I think they are a bit much more clearer now, and we've got a better sense of exactly what you're going to be achieving. So thank you very much for that. Members, we are going to be having one more session tomorrow with Centec. Hopefully at 3:30, and we want to finish by 5:30 tomorrow with that presentation. We target to finish at 5:30, so you're making your arrangements for flights, etc. Please take that into consideration. Thank you very much.
No, we're not ready. We'll go back.